Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I introduce you to a wonderfully inspiring interviewee today named Diane Collins, and Diane's going to talk to us about quantum thinking. Quantum thinking, that's really de rigueur in the times of these days, isn't it, Diane? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Veronica, and I'm so just, it's such my pleasure to be here. And it's true, right? Quantum, the new buzzword, but it is very important because we've very much entered a quantum age for quite some time now. And our technology, as they say, proverbial, is ahead of us. So it's time for us to really catch up and put it all together and really start to what I consider my life's mission, to have us go from merely knowing the wisdom to actually integrating it, living it, being the walking, talking embodiments. And that's what the purpose of quantum think and system of thinking is.
And I want to throw this in, is the way the world is like reflecting back to us these days, people are going, oh my gosh, everything's coming apart. And it's doom and gloom. But the way you're talking and the way your book is talking, it isn't that. It's this a whole new opportunity, isn't it, to work it differently, to think it differently. I want you to talk about
it. Really
that.
Is. And, you know, I didn't write about planetary energies in my book, but I call astrology my hobby.
Oh, you do? Okay, good.
I've been an avid student of astrology and really planetary cycles, the way that my teachers teach, for many, many years. And so when you look at it, and this is an aspect of quantum thinking, is what I call living fully dimensionally, where you're able to look from every dimension knowing that they're simultaneous, meaning the physical dimension, the subtle energy dimension, the virtual dimension of mind and consciousness, the spiritual dimension of heart, the cosmic dimension of the operating principles operating throughout the universe and therefore within you and me. I just wanted to mention these to presence them for every one of us. And what I call the esoteric dimension, the dimension of soul, prophecy, conscious evolution, and of course the divine dimension of the sacred, and which is responsible for all of it, right? The ultimate
right.
mystery. So when you put this all together, and I consider many of these systems, such as the planetary energy system, important for us to tune into that level of energy, as well as our own subtle energy, which I know you work with, and you're gifted expert in that area, and as well as the collective energy for humanity or whatever subtle fields we're tuning into. But when you look at, to address what you're talking about, where we look in the news and you think, you know, OMG, what's going on here? Well, when you look from a wider astrologic perspective, what you realize is that since 2008, for example, we have been in a period of restructuring, and it's specifically, I'm not an astrologer, so I just want to say that I'm a student. Mm-hmm. And
hey, you know what, Diane? We all are students.
Right?
I love putting it that way. With an
okay,
to learn, right?
We're here to learn, and you know, I'm not claiming to be the be-all know-it-all, but we all are here, as I've heard you say, to reflect to one another or the wisdom that comes through us. So when you look at this 2008 Pluto and Capricorn for 16, it's a 16-year cycle. Everything is related, you know, in it's cycles upon cycles upon cycles. But just to make it simple. And Capricorn rules structures and systems, society, systems and structures, corporations, government, all of that. And Pluto is the planet of transformation. So when I look at it, and you know, there are other cycles involved as well, but when I look at what's going on, I look at that, as you say, it's a very exciting time because we are in that time where we, as I'd like to say, should be, I'm going to use that word, consciously looking at what do we need to do to restructure the systems and structures that were born from the thinking that came out of the earlier worldview, the industrial age worldview. So we're in a quantum age, but our thinking is very much still conditioned, even those of us who are consciously, with intent, consciously evolving ourselves and on that path. But when you look at that, many of our structures are born in an earlier time frame. Mm-hmm. And our time, the technology, at least the technology, and other things, rising consciousness, whatever you want to call it, but we have a new world emerging.
Right.
And we are the ones who are here to bring it about. And so, when we see simultaneously what's going on is the dissolving, the dissolution of that. Which has reached its level of effectiveness in our lives individually as well as collectively. That which is no longer necessary to move forward into this emerging new you, I like to think of it, It's
right.
Like we're all being asked to come forth and play our significant, purposeful role in this new emergence, according to those unique traits, qualities, gifts, experiences that each of us are born with.
Well, Diane, I often joke because people do a slang on each other saying, it's not all about you, and I go, well, actually it is.
It is. And, that's another reason, Veronica, to look, when you look multi-dimensionally, right? I was talking about I like to call it living FD because I like to have fun with it all.
Oh, yeah. What does that mean, FD?
Fully dimensionally,
and
I distinguish those seven dimensions. It's like,
great, yeah.
If you say, well, it isn't all about you, well, it is all about you. Well, the premise of quantum think, which I should say for listeners, is that it is a system of thinking, I call it, of 21 principles, distinctions in thinking, and practices for the mind and awareness that put together insights from cutting-edge science, we can call quantum for short, merging with universal wisdom, that which is common to all mastery traditions, and my part, making it practical and accessible in everyday life. So the premise of it is that we don't realize that, like everything in the universe, our thinking takes place as a system. And the system in which we think.
I love this. I read this today, and I love this, yes.
Yeah, this is really what many people have said to me, wrote to me, and say, this is the missing piece.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it as a system, it's, I've said right in the beginning of the Do You Quantum Think, the book, maybe what if there's nothing really wrong with us? It's just that we have been conditioned by a set of assumptions born of what's called classical science or, scientific materialism, classical mechanical worldview that gave rise to what? The industrial age, machines.
Right.
So I say, in many ways, at that level, that stage of human evolution, we became, or we projected, in many ways, certain mechanical ways of thinking of being. And now, as you and I are bringing this out in the conversation, that we're at this place of evolution where we're ready to take that literal quantum leap and start to look and live from the more expanded set of assumptions. Whereas, why I brought this up, because the old world view, as I lovingly call it, it was the science declared only physical matter is real. So everything is kind of oriented around the ordinary five senses. And if you look in the physical alone, It's not like we don't know that there are other dimensions. I'm just talking about how we've been oriented by our collective society. So if you look in the physical, we look separate, we look different. They wanted to predict and control nature, so it kind of comes down to, you know, what is energy, a particle or a wave? You know, that either or mechanism is very much in place, where from a quantum worldview, we know that it's a both and world. So when you say that, you know, well, it is, it's not real about you, well, it is about you, that's that subtlety of the either or mechanism in place, even though we're talking about, you know, conscious subjects and living consciously and choosing. And so when you look
at
that,
it's almost
like
a dance with the objective and subjective or something, isn't it?
That's exactly right, when it's really both. So when you're looking, when you're living FD, right, then you're saying, well, in one sense, there is nothing outside of us, because this is what's called in science the observer effect, or what I call in quantum things the core distinction, the number two distinction, observer created reality, or the ancient wisdom that says the observer and the observed are one, because what we hold in awareness literally is our reality in that moment. And so,
and we project it, right?
And we project it, or as I say, what you bring is what you get, because mm-hmm. we have an influence on the field. We'll get to that more specifically in a second. But the idea is, if you say, well, it is all about you, well, it isn't all about you, well, in one sense, we are in the virtual dimension of consciousness, there is no separation.
Right.
There are distinctions, but no actual separation between ourselves and that which we hold in our awareness. Or as I say, it's like the infinite mind of, you know, the internet, the infinite mind of humanity. What are you going to click on? That becomes your reality. So our mind is like that. So now, in another sense, well, it isn't about you, you know, just going back to this, it's not an either or, it is about you or it isn't about you, it's yes, both, because it isn't about you from the standpoint that we are here with, let's say, a purpose, but a purpose of our soul, S-O-U-L, incarnation, mm-hmm. a purpose of being incarnate at this particular moment of this great transition.
That's a transitional
time.
Incarnation.
Right?
Yeah.
So we have that, mm-hmm. which, so this makes it, oh no, well, it's not about us. Well, it is about us, because we're here to evolve our soul. Mm-hmm. And it isn't about us, because we're here to contribute those gifts that we've been divinely bestowed with by human birth in this incarnation, to contribute that, to connect to that. And we all have a yearning for it anyway, right? We say
yeah,
we want to
sure
live
do.
Our purpose. Mm-hmm. We want to, you know, live our passion. That's like, I say, the silent tap on the shoulder going, mm-hmm. okay, Veronica, let's go this way. And, you know, so we're here for, it's really an all of the above. And so what we're doing now, in this moment, in this conversation, is what I call the art of distinguishing. This is one of the 21 principles.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's called the art of distinguishing, a new world view of learning. Hmm. Meaning that, what does that mean? It's like, how do we go from knowing the wisdom, which is available, you know, 6,000 years or more, or within yourself, as I enjoyed reading in your bio on your website, Veronica, where you talk about you studied, you know, many different modalities and healing and spiritual wisdom and metaphysics, and then you're really in touch with what's coming through you.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. So it's, again, it's all of the above. We're looking, and it's like we're here for that. We are here to, as I was saying, to go from merely knowing it to actually living it. So the art of distinguishing.
So it's like a conscious projection. I want to finish this projection thing because I know we get stuck on that so much. But it's like being conscious of what you've digested and absorbed and making choices that come right from the soul, in fact, don't they?
Absolutely. Because what happens is this. This is how I look at it, and it's definitely, you know, completely aligned with what you're saying about this conscious projection. That when we distinguish is to bring something in our awareness right now, okay, in the present moment, using the nuances of language. I mean, that's what we're communicating with right now. But it's deeper than that. We know it has, everything is resonance. But we bring something into our awareness in such a way that it transforms our relationship to it. It's like expands our relationship to it. And what happens is this. This is how I see it, Veronica, is that when we experience something, you know, I'm talking about what we say experiential,
right,
as distinct from just, you know, a mental construct, that is going, it's like you say, it comes from the soul. And it also goes in. It's like going out and in, right? That's mm-hmm. the motion of the universe now. Right? That
yep.
ebb and flow. So
yes.
It's coming from the soul through us. Then, as you say, it's this conscious projection. And then we are able to distinguish it so we can relate to it from here on out. And it also transforms the past. So the idea is that when you read Do You Quantum Think, for example, I also have an audio program, so it doesn't matter how, it's like you listen to it or in this conversation or the book, the intent of it is to give you connect to your own awareness in such a way that you're literally giving yourself an experiential event of that which you're becoming aware of, because it's in the experience of it that it integrates. And that's what I call the method. You know, they say, look, you can shift something in a relational field, in a non-material, you know, like the slowly, what we call physical, slowly, densely moving, so that we perceive it as that solid physical, even though we know technically it's not. But in relationships, to just, you know, ground this conversation, mm-hmm. we can use the dynamic of intent to shift something in the relational field instantaneously because it's of its non-materiality.
But it's sort of so, like you can have an intent to get even or an intent to get healed or an intent to expand, right?
Exactly. Well, I don't know what you mean by getting even.
Well, I was just saying there's a lower intent, you know, that can exacerbate difficulties between people that are relational. Or you can have an intent to create a win-win for everyone.
That's it. Yeah. And you know what? When you're thinking from a quantum worldview. Now, this is a perfect illustration brought up, because one of the things you're doing is you're starting to relate. I call this, you know, learning. We're here to become adept at mm-hmm. the five natural faculties of mind, because we know the great paradigm shift in science of the last 100 years since Einstein, and the quantum physicists that followed him. I'm not a science in quantum think. I'm not a scientist. What I do is look at how the discoveries of science shape the way we think and how we can use it to update kind of the operating system here.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at that, the paradigm shift, which was, oh, reality is physical-based, matter-based. Oh, no, no, it's not. It's mind-based. So when you look at that and you realize, well, in traditional education that was formulated under the old worldview, we study what? The matter, the mind. I mean, not the mind. Not the faculties of mind, maybe the psychology, but we study the brain. Now we know the brain is just the transmitter-receiver of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now, oh, the new worldview, the quantum worldview, is, and I say, if it's a mind-based reality, shouldn't we become very good at really mastering the five natural faculties of mind? Intent, intuition, subtle energy, resonance, and meditation, which I consider a faculty of mind, not just practice. So when you look at the subtle field, right, and you're talking about whatever your intent, when you start to quantum think, you're very much in the presence of that we exist in fields and what you hold in your intent. If you're holding, as you pointed out, you know, the low road, if you're holding resentment, or, you know, any of the other things.
Resistance. Resistance is a good one. The people.
Resistance is a good one because that, a lot of people hold, and I want to talk about these things as what I characterize them as a habit, but in a second, to take the pressure off of all of us, the blame and shame, that's got to go. But anyway, when you realize that we exist in these fields. And I call it the thoughtosphere for fun. I didn't write that in Do You Quantum Think, but, you know, a mind field.
What is it called?
I call it the thoughtosphere.
Oh,
you know how we have a biosphere? You know, around the earth, around a... There's a thoughtosphere because we're picking up thoughts, too, that aren't even ours.
And then
owning them.
Some of them are really old.
And some of them are really old. Who knows where they come from? Because, you know, we're living beyond the ordinary limits of space and time. But, you know, so the idea, well, I just want to get back to this field effect with the relational field, is that that's what the observer-created reality distinction is. Because I say it very simply, what you bring is what you get. If you're bringing to that relationship, and this is, you know, how do you bring it? You bring it in consciousness. So if you're bringing, oh, you know, that person's a jerk, or, you know, you want me to express my love to you, Mom, forget it. You know, that's resistance or whatever it is there that is not serving you or the other person, or the world, since we emanate what, you know, what we resonate, then that's the good news, because that means you can interrupt that. I call these thoughts, that before I get to the least active pathway. So that field, that's the observer-created reality. That's the observer and the observed are one, because we can bring something new to that relational field when we are aware of the automatic, let's say, I like what you said, Veronica, resistance. And I call those least action pathways. Least action being a hyphenated one word, the least creative, the least conscious action.
So they're not seeing it through at all.
No, that's what you would, you know, you call a reactive, you know, there's different ways people say it over the years, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's a reaction, it's a knee jerk. It's could be just a habit. It's not necessarily, not every least action pathway is even bad. It's just we're not in an awakened, aware state. And so it's automatic, even, you know, in business situations where You do what you did before because it was a formula that worked last time. But it may not work this time, but you're not even in that awareness. So this is what we talk about, least action pathways. So some people, you know, and there are emotional least action pathways too. Some people have anger, not because they are angry. And this is a very important distinction of the leap from the old worldview thinking to the new worldview thinking, is that from a quantum worldview, nothing is fixed and static. It's energy in flux informed by intelligence. It's conscious. And we, as human observers, for whatever reason that I can't explain, are the focal point of what we are focusing on in that energy intelligence field and how we're shaping it. So when you look at this idea that fundamentally, there's no fixed and absolute way that something is, that a person is, that a situation is, that you are, that a relationship is. That's the great, exciting news, Veronica, because that means that in every moment, and this is the third principle, it's an infinite possibility universe. Science is called superposition. That many possibilities, every possibility exists in every moment. And that we, whatever we decide to focus on, we make that real in that moment. So, this is the difference between what I call the difference between positive thinking and quantum thinking. Positive thoughts are always good to have. But when the old world view said it's a universe of solid objects, remember, these things are subtle in the background. It's not like we're actively thinking this.
Right.
It's we're brought up in that vortex.
Yeah.
Where everything is, you know, it's this way or that way, it's solid. If you want to have something to happen, you know, you're going to have to exert a big force on it to push or pull on an object to get it to move.
And people like you don't usually get through that, so be patient. That's part of it too, isn't it? You know,
right, exactly. That is, because then we go into the analysis of it, just
yeah,
what you just said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, and you know, if you're not good at it, and I grew up this way, or my teacher said when I was 5 years old,
your great grandma was blah blah.
Right, right. Or you had these genetic structure. I mean, and so we're brought up in a reality where we think, quote, that's the way it is. Whereas the freedom of quantum thinking is that you realize there is no fixed way that it is. I mean, other than what we think of as source, creator, divine, God, how you relate to it.
But even God is a moving situation, isn't it?
It is, because how many names for God, how many facets of God? You know, God, something infinite, you can't ever in any given moment say what it is, even the cumulative, right?
Well,
of everything.
I'm sort of chuckling going, because the infinite creator is something that people will say, the creator spirit. That is what you're saying, is you've got this amorphous, this big blob of influence around us, which we can move with intention, right? So isn't that infinitely creative?
Yes, that's it. So this is our, what I consider, this is our great, you know, sacred task, is to learn how these things work. So we do need to break free of some of those old cultural least action pathways, meaning the human culture,
mm-hmm.
meaning, you know, this idea that something is fixed, that we can't shift something. I mean,
can I interrupt you just for a sec? Because I was wondering if you had an example of perhaps a felon who repeats, or, you know, with a tremendous repetition of criminals, no matter, or addictions, you know, Can you apply it to anything like that from experience or from people that you've studied?
Well, I haven't really studied felons, but,
okay.
Well, wait a minute. Let me think. That's not true. Well, I wouldn't call this a felon, but I have a very good example that I never really talk about on the air.
Okay.
I always think of our corporate clients. But what happened is we were doing, my husband, Alan Collins, who's a master quantum think coach, and my partner in life and married as of this recording, just 25 years.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, and we've been actually presenting quantum thinking in companies. We do, used to do, we're going to start them again, public teleconference programs, and, you know, where you're applying, quantum think applied in real life, in business results, in personal results, in relationships.
Great.
Yeah, we've been doing it since I trademarked quantum think, the system, the body of knowledge, in 1997.
So, well, wait a minute. One more sidebar. Where were you in the corporate world when you came up with all this? Or like, who are you, Diane, just for fun?
Oh, oh my. Well, you know, I was born, as I say, a metaphysician, really. I was born, and I started questioning, okay? I remember it exactly, like 4 years old. And so, you know, and then my questioning began, like, how do we have, you know, I saw the discrepancy in the world between all the virtues that we aspire to as a human culture and how we weren't actually living it. It hasn't changed much, but we're getting better. That's what we're working on now.
But you're perceiving it is changing in a sense, eh? Hey?
Yeah, and I thought, well, how do you get what you want? And anyway, so at a very, you know, at a young teenage, I was able to, it came through me. I knew at a very young age that it would only happen through a shift in consciousness, through an elevation, you know, an awakening of consciousness. And then my, pursued after that was how could that happen? You know, how do we have that happen? And it couldn't be that, you know, how we know in every century, in every time era for humanity, there's always been the handful of Buddhas, Jesus, and, you know, the Alice Baileys, or the people who we could say the gurus had reached, established themselves in a state of full self-realization with a capital S.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's, well, wait a minute. They were telling us we're all supposed to be that.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to establish ourselves in that state.
I would
of
like to say,
master.
And Jesus said, anything I can do, you can do better.
Right. Beautiful. I love that you're singing because you have such a lyrical, beautiful voice.
Thank you so much.
You do. I love your voice. And it's right. And so let's pay attention to that. It wasn't about revering these people. It is that, you know, I'm not saying we don't have reverence, but let's get the message already. So that
which is,
was
you
really,
can do this too, right?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So my path, and you know what, honestly, my dream was and still is, and I'm not done yet in this lifetime, to create a television series that elevates consciousness as you watch, but to make it entertaining. It's not like a documentary. And anyway, that's a sidebar.
Uh-huh.
But so what happened is, you know, I went to college. I studied philosophy. I had a double major in psychology because at the time they didn't have consciousness studies as they do today. And that was the closest I could get. But I knew that wasn't it, because the only thing I was ever interested in is evolution of consciousness and how does that happen. And so I kept pursuing, and somehow I went through these different, as I call, accidental careers along the way. And one of them was as in corporate management for whatever set of circumstances. That's what I happened to do. And I was that for 7 years. I was quite successful in it for a major Fortune 50 corporation. But I used to sit in my corner office saying, okay, God, I know I'm here for a reason, but what is it? You know, because I couldn't figure out. All I was doing, reading books on how to write television, you know, teleplays, and I couldn't make the connection. But eventually, and that is also one of the distinctions in the quantum think system that I call the holo movement of purpose, how we're given every experience that we need to deliver on our purpose. But our purpose has many different expressions throughout our life as the world around us changes and as we, you know, go through life and evolve ourselves. And so it's all connected. And when you begin to distinguish and look at your life, as I say, one whole story, this is the first principle, holistic and holographic, that we're brought up to think compartmentally,
right,
spiritual and material,
mm-hmm,
management and labor.
And
anyway,
success
so getting,
and failure. That's another big one.
Right. Success and failure. You know, it's funny you brought that up because Alan, my husband, was just mentioning to me the other day about an article or a blog he read online about the different people in Silicon Valley. A whole article about how important it was to fail. Well, you know, that's a little bit either or too, but I think it was, if you look at it in the bigger picture, it's looking at the perspective of all perspective. I'm naming all the principles, but that's another one where you look at something that occurs in your life in the moment, but when you see it from the totality of it, whether it's a job you had or whether it's something you tried and it didn't work out or whether it's a relationship or a marriage and it didn't work out, if you look in the bigger perspective, you can see how it's all fitting in to the evolution of your soul purpose.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, sometimes the relationship that doesn't work out worked out perfectly for what it was meant to do.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. You know, and it's like, I know that has happened to me where, you know, you're with someone and all of a sudden for whatever circumstances it's, you realize it's a breakup and then I think, oh my God, I'll never meet anyone like that and that's the end of my life in relationship. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's, as a friend of mine says, there's always a better one around the corner. But, you know,
because you've learned and grown. That's, you know, you've opened for something.
Exactly. Now, I wanted to go back to the, because you asked me about how would this work out in addiction or...
Yeah, no, I appreciate
selling.
That. I was about to steer us back in, but it's always interesting.
And, you know, because you asked me about the corporate. Well, anyway, so I worked in corporate. Then I met my husband. He was a coach, so I started creating things that would work in corporate life. And then we started working together. And then I realized, oh, this is my work. Oh, it's quantum thinking. Anyway, so it all unfolded itself. But what, and I'm still like entertainment, and I'm still going for that. So what happened is we were doing did a voluntary program for a school that is, instead of jail, it's an adjudicated school for teenage boys.
Okay.
That they had been in trouble with the law. But the judge, it was like a second chance. Like instead of going to jail at a young age and then, you know, ruining, you've got that on your record for your lifetime, mm-hmm, they would send these boys to a school, which is in an area where we live in South Florida. And they would learn, as the founder of the school said, to be gentlemen and scholars. So what happened is we did what we used to call our flagship program, the Quantum Think 21 program. And we would deliver the Quantum Think principles, the distinctions, every day in an hour program over a 21-day period. And we didn't, as Alan says, you know, we didn't dilute it. We gave it exactly as we would do it. And the way the program worked is you would do the recreation that I call it, the practice, recreating the distinction in your life. And then you'd come down the call the next day. And part of the call was sharing about what happened when you practiced the recreation. What result did you get or not? So what happened is there was a boy, and this was such an interesting program for us because some of them, you know, couldn't read at age 16. I mean, you really got to see, you know, what's going on in our world and how important it is for us to really, you know, start restructuring this stuff so that everyone should have the opportunity of a wonderful life. Anyway, so one of the boys, they, over the weekend, you know, we didn't have the calls on the weekend, and they had to go through 7 levels, you know, from a red T-shirt to a green T-shirt. They called it executive level. Then they would get to go home. So it was no bars, but kind of like a jail, that if you didn't do everything right, if you didn't do well in all your studies, you couldn't get out until you became a gentleman and a scholar. So what happened is this guy, anyway, his name was Maurizio. He said, you know, well, let's share. He said, well, what happened is, and this had to do with the power of intent, by the way, you know, stopping, looking at your least action pathway behavior in this case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then interrupting it and instituting a new intent. And he said it just like this, verbatim. He said, I had a chance, I had a weekend pass home, and then he had to come back to school. I had a chance to do a crime, and I didn't do it. I stopped, and I thought about it, and I didn't do it. I had a different intent. That is a verbatim story.
Nice.
And that was with, I think he was 18, an 18-year-old boy who was in this adjudicated school. So you know what, Veronica, and I call it in our programs, the tiniest step of awakened awareness. That's a quantum leap. You know, the word quantum, everyone says, what does it mean? And it was coined, it came from the discovery of one of the fathers of quantum mechanics, Max Planck, who said, energy does not move in a smooth, continuous flow. It bursts in leaps, in packets of energy that he called quanta, hence the term quantum
leap. I haven't heard that before. I love that because it is bursts of energy.
Right. And it's in and out, right? In and out, it goes. It's always in the possible world, as the wonderful quantum physicist and author Amit Goswami, you might know him, he says, you know, quantum physics is the physics of possibility, because what they say is the possible world has existence. It's not nothing. So the possible world and the manifest world. So when you look at, let's say, so just for that word, quantum, that the word quantum, it indicates an amount, the smallest unit of measurable energy.
Right.
But when I use these things metaphorically, so when you look at a quantum, you know, quantum leap is a shift in state. It's a shift in the spin or a shift in the orbit location. But it's basically a shift in state. And when you and I know, right, mm-hmm. as above, so below, as within, so without, when we shift our state, everything shifts in the field, because it's a quantum effects are field effects. The mm-hmm. old world view, it was a machine, cause and effect. Press on that, and that moves in a linked, linear fashion. But quantum effects are field effects. So when we have a shift in state, everything shifts with it.
So it's like a burst. That word burst appeals to me in this.
That's it. It's a burst.
Yeah.
And so what, you know, when I look at this and I think, well, one little step of awakened awareness, that one little step that Mauricio took by saying, you know what, I'm not going to do the crime. Now, that can alter his life, and I'm sure it did, forever.
And a lot of the people around him, hey?
Absolutely, because we don't exist in a vacuum, you know. And, you know, I sometimes, because, you know, my parents, you know, as your parents are aging and people around you wherever have illness, and I didn't put this blog out yet. I'm writing for Huffington Post occasionally, but I have this plan for this blog. Whose health is it anyway? Because when you realize what we do, taking care of our health or not, it affects everybody around you. So it's like when we say, you know, we really are interconnected and interrelated, there really is this exchange, which, you know, is called in quantum land as the non-local mind field, meaning, as you know, mind is not located in the same sense as an ordinary, what we consider a physical object in
right.
space and time. So therefore, that's why you have, you know, this extraordinary intuition, or you can talk to, you know, and connect with non-incarnate
different
intelligences, right? Other dimensions.
Yes.
And so, but when you realize that, you know, this non-local field, that because mind is non-material in nature, that is what enables us to go anywhere. And we're not actually going. I know you know this. But it's a connecting. It's connecting. But what I was going to say, the scientists say, it's not even, there's this continuous exchange through the field. However, it's not, they're saying you could have a non-local mind effect without it being, it's like no pathway. That's what a quantum leap is. No visible pathway, how it happened. So when we say, you know, that one tiny step of awareness can shift an entire relationship. Now, I've seen this in our corporate work, where people work together for like, you know, 5-10 years, and they have somewhat an adversarial relationship, where
they
just don't, right? They don't like each other, right? But, you know, you're in a job, you didn't choose your team, unless you happen to be the manager hiring it, but you're just there. So what are you supposed to do? And, you know, you brought up about resistance. That was what I would call a least action pathway of, you know, human culture. You
mm-hmm.
know, resistance. Like, oh, let's just ignore it and hope the person goes away, you know.
Protecting their identity or something, yeah.
Exactly. But here, well, when they start quantum thinking, our clients, they realize every human being, this goes back to the idea of the possible and the actual manifest world, every one of us is the potential for any possible human trait. The question is, what are we going to manifest? And that's where we have choice. Now, in Do You Quantum Think, in one of the very early chapters, I think, sure, thought creates reality if you're a choice with your thinking. And this is where it becomes very important, this idea of an awakened state. Because to the extent that I call it the myth of choice, in every moment we have an opportunity to choose you know, what we're going to focus on, how, what kind of thought we want to hold in mind, what kind of thought pattern. But to the extent that the automatic and mechanical thoughts are kicking in and we're unaware of it, to that extent, we're not actually at choice. So here's the exercise. And by the way, I say blame it on the old worldview, you know, because it's not that we shouldn't be responsible or accountable for our actions. But this finger pointing, this blame and shame is not useful, and it's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And including, Veronica, with our own selves, because as I was so terrible for the first 15 years of my life, you know, I'll never get over it. You know, we just don't, it's not necessary to live that way. But what I say about these least action pathways, I say, okay, for blame it on the old worldview, blame it on the conditioning industrial age worldview, mm-hmm. where in many ways we develop these automatic tendencies. And think of a machine. Once you set it up to work, to run, it runs, you know, automatically unless something goes wrong.
Yeah, and that's excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah, because this is the thing we're at right now that we're in. As I wrote, what we're going to evolve, because that's the nature of life, as far as we know, of creation. So what's it going to be? Crisis awakening or conscious awakening? And, you know, going full circle in this conversation, where you, what you brought up at the very beginning, the time we're in now, we have the opportunity now to choose with awareness that we're choosing it. How do we choose it? Like everything else, starts with a consciously generated intent for conscious evolution, a consciously generated intent for mastery of our own mind,
mm-hmm.
because this is what we hold in awareness, is what I mean by mind, the individualized form of the infinite mind. Because, you know, people, this is the old either or, well, we have to get out of our minds and come to the heart. Well, when you have, a greater understanding, and you realize, and the ancient wisdom masters, I know you studied them, they mm-hmm. said, the mind is located in the spiritual heart. Have you ever heard that?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not, again, it's not the either or, but when you really look at on a practical, everyday, what we're living with basis, you realize that whatever you're, you know, I say it like this, the paradox, your mind is your life and you are not your mind.
Oh, interesting.
Your mind is your life because everything that we experience, including our beliefs, our notions, our assumptions, our ideas, our yearnings of the heart, of the soul, mm-hmm. our experiences of the divine, all of it is experienced in our consciousness, in our mind. And yet, we are not, you are not your mind, because you and I, we know, are that unbounded, infinite awareness. That one, you know, where is the unity? We are that one.
So it's like if we're able to deal with the mind this way, if you're able to present to yourself, oh, this is the mind, that's not I, and that's not all me, right? If you can hold those places, those aspects of life, that is a boost in consciousness right there, is it not? Doesn't everything
start
to move?
It is, because you realize that it's a both-and world. We're living as that, you know, unbounded, free, you know, in Sanskrit, Satchidananda, right?
Mm-hmm.
Existence, consciousness, and bliss. that part of us that can be aware of what's in our mind, right, in our experience, and that's the transcendent awareness. And at the same time, we're living in the immanent awareness, the immanent self, which is all the different roles we play in life, you know, as a woman, as a man, as a teacher, as a mother, as a daughter, whatever we're playing. So in this play of consciousness. So when you realize this, the idea is that if our predominant habits of thinking really do, and the meanings that we give our thought, give us our emotional experience, give us our experience of life moment by moment, and that when we are in this awakened state of awareness, we can choose. I just want to give one little practice. Then we are living in a state where we can, in fact, shape our experience, shape the trajectory for how our life is going to go. So I say there are circumstances over which it appears we have no control. And there is the matter of how we are related to those circumstances. And it's in the relationship that is where our power lies, our power of choice. But again, so here's the exercise, because I know we're going to run out of time soon, that you can make a distinction between a thought that you initiate, that originates from you. I like your word, projection, conscious projection. And distinguish between that and a thought, a least action pathway thought that just visits. Because, again, we're in mind fields. We are picking up, who knows where the thought comes from. You'll never actually know. And, you know, I was listening to your interview with the great late Valerie Hunt, and she was talking about, you know, the mind field. And my friend and mentor who wrote the foreword to Do You Quantum Think, Dr. Fred Ellenwell, says it the same way. He says, you know, we think we relate to ourselves like we're a mind inside this body. He says, but it's more accurately said that we're a body, really a body-mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Floating in this big mind. So we're in,
I love
you know,
that.
Right?
Yep.
And this is a really good graphic way of looking at it. And I heard Valerie Hunt say, you know, the mind, we know, the cutting-edge scientists know this. The mind is not synonymous with the brain. The mind is not located in our head, even though we experience it that way for whatever reason, I guess, for the purpose of survival.
Right, right.
But when you realize this non-local mind field, that you don't know how these thoughts got there or how you developed them or are you picking up, as I like to, you know, I watch all these spy movies with my husband, you know, are you picking up intel from who knows where, you know.
It can happen.
But
we have to end this. But I
okay.
Love it. Yeah.
It's a shame, but anyway, well, all right, we're having fun. But just to, so I can complete that for everyone, that we have the opportunity to interrupt wherever that thought that is visiting, that we don't have to own it. It's not the truth. You don't have to believe it or identify it with any way. You can literally choose a new intent.
I love that. This is wonderful. Give people your connecting points in the book. Tell us how to find you, what to find, and...
Okay, great. The best way to find me and connect to everything is on my website, which is dianecollins.com, Diane with two N's, very important, dianecollins.com. You can read about my book there, which is available in all stores and online, Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World, which gives the total system and the whys and wherefores. in a fun way, I hope, to read. And it, you can sign up for my newsletter and be, you know, I send content from time to time, not too often. And
your little short videos are very pithy for people who want to, you know, tune in and find out what it's all about.
Oh, good. Yeah. Right. I've got videos on there. I have a lot of free audios that were interactive when we did a teleconference study group based on the book that people enjoy. So there's a lot of things on there. And of course, to connect with me from there to Facebook, LinkedIn, and you can read my blog there.
Wonderful.
So thank you.
Well, maybe you'll
Veronica.
Come back on and talk with us. I've really enjoyed you. You know, I could just go on and on here.
I know, and I love the way that you think and bring it into, you know, another how can I say it? Adventure. I like the way you think and explore, and your imagination is wonderful.
Thank you.
Anyway,
too. And I know we're going to call you back again, so I hope you'll come and play with
I would kids. Love to, Veronica. Thank you so much for having me, and everyone,
thank
thanks for being with us.
Many blessings.